Waiting over 3 years to see a neurologist, says Nolene. That's way too long, isn't it? Listening to this interview, Mr. Canavan either doesn't care about Letterkenny or is... well, they say either way Donegal's screwed. I can't make cast those dispersions, but I appreciate your time. What a load of waffle. Mr. Canavan trying to justify blatant discrimination in the Sialta group in favour of Sligo and Galway. I would blame Sialta more than the government. Another, nurses for diabetes have been taken out of GP practices and everyone has to go to the hospital. Another one, that gentleman would seem to be agreeing with you on all the issues, but I don't hear that he's very anxious to get these issues sorted anytime soon. Also, could you mention ENT services in Letterkenny poor, to say the least? And just because of someone's phone demeanour, it doesn't mean they don't care, by the way, in fairness. I believe Mr. Canavan gets all the problems, and I'm sure he wants to do something about addressing them as has been outlined. But I think what we need now, what we need now, what we deserve, and the tipping point that we're on at the moment is we... need things to change. We don't need to talk about the problems. We need someone to step in and change them. And yes, it's great that there's an external review of the ED, but I think it needs to go far beyond that. This is an the ED is the face of the problem, but right all behind that, the ED is the tip of the iceberg, and all the problems right across the departments are the ice that you cannot see beneath the water. So I don't think if we focus on ED and say, yeah, great, you know, two people on trolleys today, that doesn't tell the full story. Of course, we know that at this point now, don't we? We know the story. Can you ask that man how long should a toilet in a ward for six men be out of order prior to getting maintenance or a plumber in to repair? Surgical ward, six men joined up with six in the next ward for at least 9 days in a hospital. 12 people using the one toilet? Is that true? I don't doubt that, listeners. When I say it's true, I hope you know I'm not doubting you. It's rhetorical, really. I don't think there's an endocrinologist. I think he left and the replacement locum left. I could be wrong. There's also no diabetes dietitian in Letterkenny Hospital. Another Letterkenny hospital is not fit for purpose for the population in Donegal. A private hospital in Northern Ireland can do over 1,000 procedures per month, properly planned and scheduled. Too many chiefs, not enough Indians. Simple. The people of Donegal are suffering on a daily basis. The process is broken. Cancer patients getting a bus to Galway or Dublin. Absolute joke. Someone needs to be a proper leader. If this was Dublin, it would not happen. The hospital needs to be the total focus, not just ED, is a comment there, indeed. I think I just made that point, and a lot of people would agree. Okay, keep them coming in. I do appreciate it. Yeah, there's some questions coming in that I did ask. Has he made representations to the minister or the head of the HSC? The answer there was no. Okay, that's it. More comments on the way. We're going to switch our attentions to sport shortly. We want your views on yesterday's action, the weekend's action, 086 60 25,000. It's time to welcome onto the programme Brendan Devenny, presenter of the DL Debate. Good morning to you, Brendan. How are you getting on, Brendan?
I'm good, Greg. Yourself?
I am doing fine. Thank you very much indeed. Right, okay. So, Niamh Connell or something else. Did Guido turn up yesterday or are Niamh Connell just that good? Controversial question just to get the ball rolling.
No, listen, you'd have to say it's Niamh Connell's ability, Greg. Listen, they're an unbelievable side. Very well coached, disciplined, you know, composure on the ball. They've got so many elements to their game. And I think for Godore this year, they probably didn't expect they'd be in a county final. Of course, missing a few of their key players as well due to immigration and things like that. So they didn't probably have a full complement as well. And going up against Niamh Connell, even with the full complement, would have been very difficult. But yeah, it was completely one-sided. You've seen a very ruthless, well-drilled Niamh Connell team yesterday, and even though it ended up 118 to 1-8, Greg, it could have been a lot more than
and
that. You know,
like, and I mean this with no disrespect to Guidor, but you also get the impression Niamh Connell will be kicking themselves they conceded 1-8.
Yeah,
that's
possibly,
how good they are. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Listen, I interviewed the guys after the game. They made reference to that. You know, Ethan O'Donnell, man of the match, and you know, Alton Doherty, and the manager, Martin Regan. And you're always going to get spells in a game, Greg, when you're so far ahead. You automatically kind of fall back a small bit. But the fitness and everything about Niamh Connell, you know, they are just the serious outfit. And at that stage, it was a tough day for Godore. They lost the reserve final as well, very narrowly to the Rua before it. It was Kevin Cassidy's last day for the club as well, the legend that he is. He almost got a goal at the end, could have swung the game and hit the post with a wee flick on. So, yeah, it was a tough day for Godore. They had great support up there. But, listen, two brilliant days for Aoife Rua. And, of course, Niamh Connell march on to play Gowna now in 12th of November in Ulster. They're back-to-back champions in Ulster as well, so they're away from home in that one. But
how does Niamh Connell set up travel, or how will it travel this year?
Well, they're a perfect team to go on the Ulster, you see, because as the weather gets poor, and we were blessed yesterday with the day and the pitch was in it, but as the weather gets poor, when you have a team that's set up and they're a counter-attacking team, that's what they're brilliant at. Now, don't get me wrong, they pushed up in Gidor yesterday, went after the kickouts, you know, really hammered them, you know, won the majority of the Gidor kickouts in the first half and won all of their own. And when you're doing things like that, Greg, you're looking at the different elements. They weren't just going to sit and play how they played to Dunans. You know, it was a very different Niamh Connell performance yesterday. So that's the different elements to them. So they have that in their locker again in the Ulster. They're very confident in what they do. So I think it's going to take a very good team to beat them. Where they go, as we know, Ulster's, you know, there's only two Donegal teams have ever won Ulster. So, you know, it is a very difficult proposition, but they'll think themselves they have as good a chance as anybody can end it.
For sure. Right, so Jim McGuinness is now preparing his team for a game against Mickey Hart's Derry. If Jim McGuinness was sitting watching yesterday's final and watching the semis as well, how excited will he be about the pool that he has to draw on to go up against that Derry team?
Yeah, listen, I think he'd be very excited. It's been a good championship. I think from the way, in fairness to the two lads that stabilised Donegal last year, O'Rourke and Paddy Bradley, we've seen kind of the green shoots of this new team coming through. And we've spoken about many times, Greg, about, you know, the likes of course, of Michael retiring and the hole that was going to lead. And everything happened last year. So the fact that that group of players was able to stabilise, and particularly, Greg, you've got to look to the Monaghan performance where we went up to Oma and beat Monaghan, who were very close to being an All-Ireland final. So you add in Jim now and everything he's going to bring, plus there's going to be an extra six or seven players back playing, and then you have, as I say, a good club championship behind us. So, you know, Niamh Connell representing Donegal now, you know, and I think they're by far the best team currently in the county. So, you know, everything I think in terms of Donegal this year, I mean, of course, Hart and McGuinness is, I suppose, personal battles over the years where you know, Jim has come out on top the majority of times. Makes that such an interesting with everything, the backstory of Hart and Derry and all that as well. So the Ulster Championship, absolutely fascinating. I mean, should Donegal get over them, you know, they're going to face either a Monaghan Cavan or Tyrone straight after it. And in many ways, you know, Ulster is going to be unbelievable this year. But again, is that going to hamper them going into the group stage? You know, because so much is on the line already, and you just don't have that in other provinces. But listen, I think the mini All-Ireland series that we have in the Ulster Championship is going to be fascinating. But I think Donegal will be in a great place going into that game.
All right, OK. We were talking last week, and you set it up beautifully, the Maville story and the Narossa story. Narossa, of course, beating Maville in the Junior A Football Championship. But they're trying to get that genie back into the bottle now. Because Maville have lodged an objection to the outcome of that final. What's your take on that? What chance does it have a success? Or what's your view even on a club protesting or objecting to a result?
It always makes you feel uncomfortable. You know, you look at everything that's going on the whole year in terms of, like, Narossa, what they've put in there to get across the line in a final. And you think, is it going to now be challenged in the boardroom? But then again, you have to think, were Maville unjustly treated in that final? Were the rules broken? The objections in that the player was on the pitch. And funny, myself and Ryan Ferry were doing a commentary for Highland, and you know, we made reference to it. I was saying, you feel it. It's funny, you watch football so much, Craig, you're like, hold on a second, there's a spare jersey here. Now, whether the player was injured or not, or how long he was on the pitch for, is it enough to affect the outcome of it? Was the rules broken there? How does the county board deal with that? If you look at the huge one last year with Glenn and Kilmacudden in the All-Ireland final, the objection came in. There's a whole hurrah about this. In the end, you know, a replay was granted, but then Glenn withdrew the objection. So, you know, we had the scenario a few years ago where Kilcare and Niamh Connell, the penalty shootout and the player that shouldn't have been. The county board just issued a fine there. A lot of people thought that could have been technically a replay. A fine was handed out. So listen, it's with the CCCC now. Three Cs or four Cs in that national one. So Greg, what they take out of this or what they think, is there enough in this to warrant a replay? this is the question. And, you know, I'm sure there's a few worried people around about Narasa at the minute. And of course, there's an Ulster Club Championship game to be coming up soon if anything is to be done.
Yep, so they'll have to sort that out quick. You mentioned Ryan Ferry, your co-commentator on that game. He's on the show with you tonight along with John Gilday and Stephen Cassidy. And also Mo O'Donnell. She was at the Termin Errigal Kieran game.
Yes, indeed. It was a tough day at the office now. Few sin bins, three sin bins for Termin didn't help them. And there was a certain Canavan in there. You know, they hit 3.11. She scored 3.8. You know, 3.8, Greg. Absolutely phenomenal. So I text my mate then to begin with. I says, right, which part of the bloodline Canavan is he? And she said, oh, he was like, that's Peter Canavan's niece, current Errigal Kieran captain, Tommy's sister. So I was like, there you go. I says, the Canavans are at it again.
You
so
went through full seasons not scoring 3.8.
Yes, yeah, possibly, yeah. I've nowhere near to back that up, so we'll park that, Greg. Yeah, 3.8.
And I can say, because I have no evidence to suggest it's the case, I just thought it might be amusing, that's all.
Listen, we'll say no, but listen, you got to hand it. If anybody racks up something like that there, it's phenomenal. So listen, Errigal Kieran march on. So listen, tough and Termin ladies, and that's their season over for now. So we've intermediates. As I say, we're lining up against the Cavan team. So we have our junior, intermediate and senior champions in the men's side now, all rolling on the Ulster. We want to wish them all the best as that competition kicks off.
All right, it's going to be a cracking show as always. John Gilday, Stephen Cassidy, Ryan Ferry, and of course Brendan Devaney and Mo O'Donnell going through all the action, reflecting on that county final. And also, the crowd thinned out quite early in that game, didn't it? Or was that my imagination, or did they all decide to stand on the camera side? The crowd thinned out an awful lot early.
But I guess, right. Like, listen, from the get-go, there was a real feeling in the pit of your stomach when the first five or six up before Ghidorah registered. You know, there was a real level of one team on another level and the other team struggling to keep up. So it's a tough watch, Greg, for a neutral, I guess, you know. Okay. Particularly, my wee man, I was leaving him to his Nina there out in Wonder Years. He was still flying a wee Ghidorah flag. Of course, my wife's Ghidorah out the window. I was laughing to myself this morning when the cars were looking, probably thinking, who's this here? Still flying the wee Ghidorah flag.
He's proud of the lads. All right, so the DL debate's live just after 7 o'clock tonight and a full hour of conversation on all things GAA. One of the great nights I've had out in recent years was at your first charity ball, Brendan. It was formal and it was informal. There was plenty of chat about sport, but it was done in a really accessible way. I'd equate it to sort of when you watch, someone might watch the Beckham documentary, but isn't a big football fan. You don't necessarily have to be to enjoy the chat and the crack. And it's back again, and it's only just around the corner.
That's it, 24th of November in the Mount Errigal Hotel, surely. Up with Terry there, looking after us as ever. So I'm really looking forward to it, Greg. We have comedians coming, and we have musical numbers on the night, and just looking to entertain. And I think it's the way to do things now, Greg. If you're going to ask people for donations and to help out in charities, and it's always nice to attach it to something like a ball. And of course, we have a GoFundMe as well. If you search the Bees Charity Ball as well, people have been very kind. If they can't make it, they've been putting in donations there as well to obviously plan Ireland. I was in Togo earlier in the year. We're going to launch a few videos in that. Brad O'Donnell was out along with us and Carol Wickham from Plan, and we went out to meet some of the kids that we sponsored. So we sponsored 21 kids on that night the last time, Greg, and we keep that sponsorship on going. And then
I just want to recap that if you don't mind, for those that attended it last year, so they know the difference they're making. €24,000 was raised on the night for three charities: Plan International Ireland, Cancer Care West and Focus Ireland. And the funding from those donations for Plan International sponsored 21 children throughout the whole year. So in that one night where people had great crack and they were generous, don't get me wrong, the ripples from that night still continue now. You've got 21 young children supported through that. And that's really remarkable. I just want to go back on that because sometimes we say things and it doesn't land. But that's really, really significant. And you were able to go over for yourself firsthand to see the impact that those donations on that night in the hotel in Letterkenny, they're being felt over there by young people and giving them the best possible route to a positive life for themselves. And you're going at it again. Plan International again is going to be one of the beneficiaries. The Donegal Hospice, of course, and Epilepsy Ireland. And all three really close to your heart, Brendan. So you're hoping for a sellout, which it will be. Half the table's already gone, but supporting three amazing charities there.
Yeah, listen, that's exactly it. And listen, Plan don't just help the kids, obviously, but first of all, nutrition, but education is huge. Like if we're going to, you know, pull up the rest of the companies in the world and progress them, the education is the key to that, and keeping the wee kids in their village and making them happy and helping, you know, with the likes of stopping early childhood marriage and the horrors of FGM and things like that. So they want to protect the whole community, not just the individual child. So it was great to see them. And I sponsor kids myself as well, Greg. So it was great to go out and meet them. The welcome we got in the community, it was absolutely mind-blowing. I mean, looking back at the video, you know, I still can't believe some of it's how it happened and that it happened, you know. So it was fantastic to see. And I suppose it just strengthens in many ways. Obviously, Dad's last days was in the hospice, you know, and epilepsy then was something that's affected her family greatly. And now, I suppose, in the memory of Margaret and Dad as well, I can attach. You know, it's hard for me to even look and think that happened last year, but if I can put my energy into this and in their memory, it's the only way I can kind of actually confront the grief of what happened, you know, is to kind of do a bit of help somebody else in their honor. Otherwise, I just park it, I just push it away. Life's busy and all that. So it's nice that on a night like this, I think I can truly kind of look back at things and.
Yeah, and you can honour those two really important people in your lives as well, which is incredibly special. And they'll not be far from anyone's thoughts there when people gather next month, Brendan. And a lot of people understand exactly what you're saying because, unfortunately, we all have to encounter our awful challenges through our life. Okay, so I'll tell you, it's not a bad night out for €75. Table of 10, €7.50. You can get your tickets through us here at Highland Radio, the Arch Complex in Letterkenny, Sister Sarah's in Letterkenny, and the Mount Errigal Hotel in Letterkenny. So it's a fantastic night. Great food. The place is always beautifully laid out. There'll be a music. You're not going to sing, are you? Or are you? I don't know. Would that make me buy a ticket or not? Brendan might sing.
My wee lad was doing Cash on Ireland. Yeah,
he sang 2 years ago. He's fantastic, young lad. Don't know where he gets his confidence from.
I have a couple of singers coming tonight. I like wee things again. I suppose music and a wee bit of drama mixed in. And,
excellent.
But we'll have a bit of crack.
Exactly.
It'll go well.
It's a great night out. Tickets also available in Sister Sarah's, the Mount Argyle Hotel in Letterkenny. So if you're a business out there, €750, and go along yourself and bring 9 of your staff. And we get, Brendan guarantees you'll have a good night, but no refunds are available. listen, Brendan, good luck with the show tonight. And hopefully now those tickets, I'm sure they'll fly out the door, because even the mere mention of it, I know that you sold a ton of them, because everyone knows it's a fantastic night out. So we'll chat again next week, Brent. Stay safe.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much indeed. All right, Brendan Devaney there. 086 60 25,000. Your WhatsApps and texts. It's time for Monday Focus, where we put to one side a bit of information to talk in greater detail about an issue. Our guest today is Conor McGinty, who is just recovering from an operation to treat gynecomastia, which is the enlargement of the male breasts, usually due to a hormone imbalance or genetics. Good morning, Conor. How are you feeling, by the way?
Hi, great. All right, I'm laid up in bed, but grand so far.
Okay.
So far, anyway.
Talk to me about this condition and how it affects people. What age does it start affecting them, and what impact might it have on someone? We'll just start with the condition itself first, if that's okay.
So gynecomastia is something like, say, I only really found out about 10 years ago, but I've had it from about 16 years ago, from the age of 12 or 13. So essentially what it is obviously all males, all females have breast tissue. Mm-hmm. a male is supposed to have a very limited amount of breast tissue, and unfortunately for some males, when they go through puberty, they'll gain extra breast tissue around the chest area, and then it progresses, it goes away once puberty is finished. But for some, it stays. And if it stays, it means that that certain hormone, the estrogen hormone that women have, can be a wee bit more prominent, or it can fight against the testosterone in men.
Mm-hmm.
And then the condition just progressively and gradually gets worse. So there's a difference between, you know, a man that maybe is overweight and has fat tissue, and then someone with gynecomastia is a man that has essentially female breast tissue, glands, and then glandular breast tissue in their breasts. So it's not something that a man particularly wants to have.
And obviously the visual impact of it is the growth of breasts, but obviously it's caused then by a bit of genetics and a hormone imbalance. So obviously your hormones are out of skew. Does it affect you in any other way other than the sort of physical presentation of it, Connor?
Well, that's the question. There's a big question mark over. You know, in my mind, and obviously I'm not a doctor, so I can't say this, but I think it's caused a lot of, you know, anxiety and depression and things like that over the years, or made me more susceptible maybe to it. But
I presume, though, medical professionals will then say to you, well, that's the distress of the growth of breasts, and it's not a chemical reaction as such, it's a psychological reaction. Yes. But you would dispute that?
I would probably dispute it. But at the same time, you know, I have no evidence for that. Obviously, it's just my own thoughts. But all boys in puberty have hormone imbalances, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I've been told by the doctors. And it's just when you're leveling out or whatever, you know, 13, 14, 15, it all fixes itself and corrects itself, and then everything's fine. And unfortunately for those that have gynecomastia, it doesn't correct itself. But then once the breast tissue is formed and it gets worse, the hormone imbalance then actually does correct itself anyway, but it's too late. You know what I mean?
My
hormones now have all been checked, and, you know, I've had them checked for years, maybe 10 years now, and everything's fine. Everything's perfect. I've had God knows how many blood tests over the years, and everything's fine. I'm healthy, and
good.
You know, everything's great. It's just this physical symptom was then left.
And you can imagine a million scenarios where this would have been very difficult for a teenager and a young man. Stuff that we might take for granted, being on holidays, sports, I don't know, dependent on whether you're sporty or not.
Yeah.
But loads of different reasons as to why, you know, this would have a big impact, particularly on the younger mind, Connor.
Yeah, 100%. It was, I think my family and the people closest to me have only really discovered the full extent of it this last year, since I decided that surgery was what I was having. But it really sort of wrecked my teenage years and my childhood, I'd say, from the age of 12, 13, right through to a week ago. I was having, you know, bad sort of day-to-day issues up to a week ago before the surgery with it. Like, so it's, I think it started really, the first time I was really aware of it was a PE at school, and the bullying that I would have got a PE, and then realising it was different to everybody else, and seeing all the fellas in class, you know, athletic fellas, and I was athletic. I was a cross-country runner, played a wee bit of football. I wasn't overweight, I was skinny.
Yeah, but the more lean you get, the more pronounced this breast growth gets, because it's not
exactly
fat, so to speak.
Exactly, and I had been to a few personal trainers over the years as well, who obviously were giving me the wrong advice because they didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
They were saying, oh, it's fat, lose weight and get fit. So I remember doing these crazy, like, 6 and 10 week transformations, and everybody saying to me, oh, you're looking fantastic. And then when I was taking my top off, I was going, what the hell's wrong here? Like, this obviously, because the glandular tissue, you can't burn it. It's not like normal fat. You can't burn it away.
Yeah. And did you feel that everyone was always looking at you, that no matter what you tried to do, everyone knew, and most of your life, if you were to go outdoors, was spent trying to conceal this, even perhaps when people weren't aware? Was it always the thing right at the front of your mind that it's all about this?
Which is incredibly
understandable. And very draining on your mental health. That's also very understandable, Connor.
Yeah. Every second of every day, it was a thought in my head. And it's funny, like, I put that post up the other day on Facebook. They raise a wee bit of awareness about it, obviously, and hopefully that maybe, you know, if there's a young boy out there that was in my position that sees it and sees that there's a wee bit of hope, you know, because I didn't really have any hope when I was at that age.
And I also wonder how many people, Connor, aren't diagnosed. Or, I don't know, try and conceal it with weight gain or... Do you know what I mean? And it depends how pronounced it is, how large the breast growth is. Obviously, I presume it's like with a woman, some are going to be smaller than others and less pronounced than others. So someone might not obviously know it's what they have, but they themselves know what they have because they stand and look at themselves in the mirror. So you just wonder, you know, how much of this is out there troubling people undiagnosed?
I'd say there's a lot, and to be honest, the amount of messages that I've got over the last day or two, some of them quite serious, actually, which is a wee bit concerning. But one guy in particular, if you want me to, I'll talk about a few. Obviously, I'm not giving any names, but one guy in particular had sent me a message, and he said, you know, I feel your pain, Connor. He says, in 2015, I was told that I had the same condition and not to worry about it, that it would never be anything serious. Mm-hmm. He says, in 2019, his right nipple inverted after tests and biopsies, and they concluded that he had a thing called invasive ductal carcinoma, mm-hmm. which is breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2022, it was confirmed he had the BRCA2 mutated gene, and he was told that in 2023, a couple of months ago actually, that the cancer had spread to his lungs, and he was stage 4. So I've been chatting to that guy, and he's saying that he was going to the NHS the same as me.
Mm-hmm.
With this condition, and they were telling him, look, it's nothing to worry about, it's cosmetic.
Mm.
That's what they say, it's cosmetic,
mm-hmm.
and nothing to worry about, and this is the situation that he's in now. Like, but I would really disagree with that.
Was that part of your motivation to have the surgery, to reduce the risk of you developing breast cancer? One would have to imagine, you're not a doctor, or I'm not,
mm-hmm.
but the chances, I mean, men get breast cancer, but you must have felt that, does this make me more prone to it?
Yeah, well, my granny had breast cancer.
Yeah.
And obviously it was always a thought in my head. I think that maybe it was more for me, it was how it looked and how I felt and playing football and going out gigging and wearing shirts and pulling at them and tugging at them and just being so unhappy in my own body. I just never felt like my body was mine. You know, this... And my wife always said to me, oh, Connor, it doesn't really bother me. And, you know, but now that I've had the operation and people have actually seen the before and afters, like, even my wife goes to me now, she said, I never realised actually how pronounced it was until I see you now with it.
But also, Connor, I mean, you've a bit of work to do now because obviously you had the operation last week and that's fine. But there's, you know, you've been conditioned a little bit with having it for so long, so you know you have to watch yourself now for the next wee while, because it's, you know, everything you hoped might not be delivered just by the operation, and you have to make sure look after yourself now over the next while as you get used to it, both physically and mentally, emotionally, Connor.
I think that's the scariest part too, you know, because this last 16 years, as you say, I've built up a lot of deep-rooted habits, I'd say. You know, my posture's terrible. I was always leaning forward. I was always covering myself. Things that other people were picking up on, but obviously didn't realise what it was for.
Yeah.
And then the biggest thing of them all was this whole condition left me, as I talked about on the Facebook post I put up, like, you know, suicide in my mind a lot of time over the last 16 years because of it. And then mental health counselling and things that I got, and I ended up with diagnoses, one in particular, which was a body dysmorphia, and then health anxiety as well, which is just one of the few.
But that's all that really, really understandable. I mean, you'd have to be completely bulletproof to not feel those things, body dysmorphia, health anxiety. Do you know what I mean? Particularly, especially too, when you become, when people start messaging you, oh, I understand that and go through their experience. It's an awful lot for anyone to take on, Connor. So you've looked after yourself physically now, and you can rebuild your life and address a lot of the issues, and just make sure that you look after yourself now you know, mentally over the next wee while. And I'm sure you're going to have a lovely, long and happy life now that hopefully this is behind you, Conor.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, as I say, like, things look, things, it's mad to think that, you know what I'm saying, at nearly 30 years of age, the world looks like a bigger place. And it really does. Good. Like, you know, it looks...
And you obviously have a clearly very loving and understanding partner as well.
Oh, 100%. Alison's brilliant. And, you know, she was even saying to me today, she was sort of saying, like, you know, look at, over the last maybe 10 years, I've done a good wee bit with some music and stuff. That was on ITV and X Factor, and this, that, and I released a few albums, gigging and all that stuff. She's like, you did this while you had a deal with that, so imagine what
you can do, now.
Career-wise now over the next 10 years. Like, you don't have to worry about it. So
even at the gym, you're going to kick its ass now.
100%. I can't wait to get to the gym. Can't wait to get to the gym.
All right. Well, listen, stay positive, stay strong, and hopefully you'll and I'm sure you already know that your words and you publicly speaking in and of itself is a huge achievement. So you've amazing strength and capacity, Conor, and look after yourself, and I wish you nothing but happiness going forward.
Hey, thanks, Will and Greg. Much appreciated.
Take care of yourself, Conor, and thanks for that. Excuse me. Now, you would know that the traffic lights at the Polestar roundabout in Letterkenny, it's a very important route into and through Letterkenny and out of Letterkenny as well, they were switched on. There's a couple of weeks of tweaking with them and trying to get them synchronised correctly for the free movement of traffic, but we're 1 week odd in, and Emmett Rush is the owner of Rush Fitness, and he joins us on the programme now. Emmett, your reaction so far, I suppose, as a motorist, but as a business owner?
Yeah, they're not really doing their job, Greg, too well, for our side of the town anyway. I think the main traffic in Letterkenny, from what we see from our members and from the people in the business parks up around this side of town, it seems to be coming down the Remilton Road, sort of past Arena 7, and then down from the Business Park Road from Mountaintop down. It all converges at that small roundabout at Thomas Keith, and then the next roundabout after that is the Valley Rain roundabout, and that would be the main blockade into town. So the traffic lights, their main purpose was meant to be improve congestion, but the left lane leading out of town when you're passing the Mount Errigal, to me, I thought that would have, it looked like they were creating a slip lane, which would have left the traffic free-flowing to allow that blockade that always happens in that side of town to leave town, to leave it that the lights would control people going through town or back into town. But it hasn't happened, and I came in yesterday, which isn't a busy day on a Sunday, and the traffic was backed up again past Arena Selwyn up their Melton Road at 1 o'clock on a Sunday, which never happens unless it's a bank holiday weekend.
And also too, particularly with your type of business, Emmett, and correct me if I'm wrong at all here, but you know, if you're looking to book a membership of a gym or something that you're going to visit on a regular basis, you do factor in accessibility and what have you.
Yes.
And you know, it's a competitive area, I am sure. You don't want anything that's going to discuss anyone from signing up.
Yeah, but no business wants that.
Yeah.
I mean, last week when the lights got turned on, we had members messaging that took 40 minutes to travel 1 kilometre to try and get down to the business park where they would have been booked in for a 10 past 5 session, and they made it at 10 past 6. And that was then coming from the mountaintop down to us, which is 1 kilometre. And it took 40 minutes, and they would sat for 10 minutes before they came in the door. That only ever happens on bank holiday weekends in Letterkenny whenever the northern traffic's coming back through, and that's our side of town always gets that sort of traffic. But for it to be happening now, nearly daily, from the light turn on, it's not to improve the congestion. And Letterkenny has a serious issue with congestion, and the lights were meant to improve that. Mm. And for, I don't know what it's like on the other side of town for the businesses on the other side of town, but for our side of town anyway, it has not improved congestion at all.
And in fact, you would argue it's creating congestion on certain routes, slowing traffic down.
Well, when you come in on a Sunday on a non-busy day and traffic is backed up there on Melton Road, they're not doing their job. Sunday's traffic should be pretty free-flowing whenever it's not overly busy, but it wasn't on this side of town. And again, this side of town seems to get it more than, I'm not sure if it gets it more than other side of towns on the main busy times, because we only come from this side.
Yeah.
But after Milton Road traffic and the traffic comes down from all the business parks, you have thousands of people that are leaving work around the same time that congregate onto these roads.
Mm-hmm.
So that left lane out of town past the Mount Errigal should be a free-flowing lane, because any traffic coming around from any other side of town can merge into the right lane, so they're not interfering with the left lane mm-hmm. to allow it to get away from town to free up the town from traffic. I mean, there has to be joined up thinking with what they're doing. The issue with Letterkenny has always been that we need a relief road out of town. But when they were doing that work from the four lane, it was meant to, we were promised it would improve congestion, and we're coming into another Christmas time. And it's that, I mean, my business is my business, but I mean, there's other businesses around the town that are probably looking at that traffic and congestion going, we're going to get that again, where people are going to decide it's too much hassle to go to Letterkenny.
Well, that's it. You see, that's the risk indeed. Okay, Emmett, listen, thanks for your insight. I really do appreciate it.
No
that's
problem.
Emmett Rush there, owner of Rush Fitness. Are you a business person with a similar view? And just as we were listening to Emmett there, watching a video edited and produced by Pranshia Sakar on YouTube, which gives a real indication from above how traffic is moving there. But it tells us how traffic's moving on the roundabout and is very useful. But it doesn't really talk to the issues further up the line that Emmett there was referencing. Well done, Greg. A good interview with Tony Canavan. Hope they'll take it on board, all the issues you mentioned. Mr. Canavan set up an inquiry clinic. Guess where? His own county, Roscommon. What a surprise. It would have been encouraging to hear a slightly firmer commitment on a minor injuries clinic for Donegal. We need it. It would be a huge difference. Well, it would be a significant difference for Letterkenny University Hospital, particularly the ED there and elsewhere. But it was like, we'll see. There's a review of what's going on at the moment elsewhere, but we know they're working really well. It just doesn't seem to be on the cards or agenda. That would be my reading. Government does not care if we put 100,000 people on the streets. As far as they're concerned, the worst that will happen is that they lose one TD each. Very simple maths, folks, says the listener. Okay, I'm going to get through as many of those comments as I can as I take a quick break, and then we'll be back. Dr. Mary McCreary is a dietitian nutritionist and joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Mary. Thanks for the time today.
Good morning to you too.
It's good to have you on the show. Right, we're discussing gut health. And is it particularly important at winter time? And what is gut health, I suppose? Two questions for you.
Okay, right. Well, this is a campaign that's been run by Yakult to try and advise the general public basically on two things. Number one, what is your gut health? And then your winter gut health. Now, there's so many myths and misinformation there is about how to keep healthy, what you should be eating, what you shouldn't be eating, that some of it is actually down to just very basic information as how we can actually keep healthy. So let's look at it, first of all, about your gut health. A lot of people are under the impression that your immune cells are in your nose and in your throat, whereas in actual fact, 70% of our immune cells reside in your gut. So it's really, really important to actually make sure that you have very, very good health. Now, basically, what is that? We're talking about your gut microflora, and we've got good bacteria, and they're really the good bacteria, really the gatekeepers to your immune system, and they try and ward off any type of bad bacteria that could come in, viruses. So getting a really, really good diet is very important, and keeping during the winter months, keeping up the consumption of your fruits and your vegetables and your high fiber foods.
Mm-hmm.
So where, you know, frozen vegetables are as nutritious as fresh vegetables, whereas people tend to think that they're somehow not as good. And using frozen fruit to make into your smoothies and making sure that you have high fiber foods as well. So the two things that people think that we should be doing is, number one, that we should be taking a vitamin C supplement during the winter months, but that actually is not correct information. What we should be doing is taking a vitamin D supplement. We live in the Northern Hemisphere, so our exposure to sunlight is very limited during the winter months, from about October to April. So it is recommended that everybody takes a vitamin D supplement during those winter months.
So are we better trying to keep our vitamin C levels up through our diet, but because of course vitamin D is harder to draw from your diet, go down the route of a supplement for vitamin D.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you can get your vitamin C, your full daily requirement of vitamin C, in one small glass of orange juice. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to have the vitamin C naturally in your diet, you don't need the vitamin C supplement, but we definitely do need the vitamin D supplement. As you say, we don't get it from a lot of foods. We can get it from oily fish, so things like salmon, liver, red meat and eggs, and we have vitamin D added to what's called fortified foods. So that would be the likes of breakfast cereal and Yakult Balance. But it's so important that we actually take that vitamin D supplement mm-hmm. as well. And you, even though you might be sitting inside on a sunny day, you can't absorb the vitamin D through the glass.
In terms of liquids, you have different conversations with people about they count various things towards their liquid intake, which is generally, I thought, referred to water. What is the, to maintain good health, you know, how much should we be drinking, and should it be at least a minimum water?
It doesn't have to be water. It has to be fluid, and at least 6 to 8 glasses a day of fluid. Now, that can be milk, it can be water, it can be tea, it can be your fruit juice, it can be any type of fluid. But fluid is really, really important. So when you eat your food, fluid is really, really important to aid in the absorption of the nutrients and to move the food through your digestive system. And it's one of the main causes of why people suffer from constipation, is because they don't drink enough fluid. But it can be any fluid. Now, alcohol doesn't count in that, but any other fluid, it does count as fluid. So, you know, as the nation of tea drinkers, just keep on drinking your cups of tea. It doesn't have to be water. It doesn't have to.
And just finally, doctor, because we're quite short on time, maybe how important then to our gut health is, you know, being as stress free as possible and getting a good night's sleep?
Well, there's a lot of information that shows that by being stressed actually can really affect not only your mental health but your physical well-being as well, because of this hormone cortisol, which is your stress hormone. So it's obviously to try and remove as much stress out of your life, easier said than done. But keeping up your good diet, a little bit of exercise, keeping up your fluid intakes, the basic things that we all should be doing to keep ourselves healthy. But for anybody that is particularly interested, Yakult have a whole area on yakult.ie on the winter gut health guide. So that's actually very informative and very well worthwhile checking.
Lovely stuff, doctor. Thank you so much for your time. Have a lovely day. That was Dr. Mary McCreary, a dietitian nutritionalist, talking about the importance of your gut health over winter and its relationship with your immune system. Right, very close to the end of the programme. Just a couple of comments here. I had two relatives in LUH recently, were in VHI, kept in over the weekend, discharged first thing Monday morning. Why not discharge Friday evening? The VHI are paying, they say. Thank you, Greg. You were great. Times past, the local doctors treated chest infections and did stitches. Now one has to travel to Letterkenny for these. And last, we need a bigger hospital for all the extra people in Donegal now. The government don't look at services needed when agree to take in people from abroad. And where is all the money they're getting being spent? Those in the council and the Dáil need to get into the real world. Listen, thanks so much for a really positive reaction to the show today. And we're going to do it all again tomorrow morning from 9 a.m. For me, Greg Hughes, and researcher producer Caroline Orr. Have a lovely day.